Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Everybody at Features are being made redundant, so there are no meeting rooms available, which means that we're recording this podcast in my flat.
Hooray!
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm John Lennon. I'm Michael Saunders.
I'm Graham Morrison.
And I'm Ben Everett.
And this is Tux Radar Podcast 17, Series... No?
5.
Series 5, yes.
Yes. My favourite series.
In this episode, we have... a slew of news, a brace of discoveries, a gaggle of speak your brainses, a murder of challenge reports, and a pride of open ballots. There's also, maybe there's one last thing. Mike's here. He normally does the one last things. Oh, Mike's here.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I've actually been in your house for the last 2 weeks. You just haven't noticed. I've just been sitting in the corner quietly sobbing.
That's why there's never any milk.
We knew you guys were close.
Yeah. Now it's official.
So, yeah, Mike, what's it like being in England?
It's so strange. This was all hills and green when I was yeah. And the people speak the strange dialect of German that I don't quite understand.
German with a bit of French.
Yeah. And people, in queues, people stand quite far away from you as well, which is strange.
Does that not happen in...
In Austria, everybody stands pressed up right against you, which is very annoying. So, yeah, that's why I'm back in England.
Cool. But the queue got too big.
Yeah.
I should add that this building was actually built in 1796, and it's Grade 2 listed.
Aha. So if anybody wants to buy this...
Yeah, there's some Grade 2 listed mould over there.
Yes.
Anyway, enough of this. It's time for podcasting, but before we get onto the podcast, I should mention Linux Format. It's a magazine.
Yes.
It's a magazine about Linux, and you can subscribe at very attractive rates at tinyurl.com/LXF, offer one. Also now on Google Play, Zinio, Apple's thing, and many more.
Great.
Digital digits.
It's the future.
Yes, synergy.
It is.
Leveraging synergy
for the next generation.
So let me just check. Intro, people in this episode, subscribe. It must be time for news.
News, that's me. This fortnight there's been not a lot of news, but a bit of news. Some good news, I think. Well, we'll start with a bit of not so good news. The puppy founder has retired.
He did that before, didn't he?
He did. It's not the first retire.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Alex Ferguson. But this time he says he really means it.
I used to play around with Puppy Linux quite a bit a few years ago, but this has been like a 10 trillion spin-offs of it now, hasn't there? I find it a bit hard to...
They've, as far as I'm aware, they've got their idea of how, you know, distro should be stripped down for lower power computers, and they've done it off a few different ones. They've done their Ubuntu version, there's a Slackware version.
Yeah, that was it, Slackpup, I think. Yeah.
I believe from his blog post, it doesn't look like the project's going to shut down. It's just going to transition on to other people. And he is Barry Kaula. I don't know how you pronounce his name. Sorry, Barry. I've got one of those at least wrong.
Well, it's all right. He's retired now.
So. Barry, anyway. And he's going to work on new projects. So he's interested in the Ubuntu phone. And doing some packages so that instead of Puppy being a distro itself, it's just a Deb package you install and it converts your Ubuntu or presumably Debian.
I quite like that idea, actually. I've often said that before, you know, with the 10 trillion like Fedora respins, a lot of the time you could just do a script, you know, to change Fedora into this type of distro. You don't need to release ISO images for every single one.
Yeah, well, actually, Fedora, it does it quite well because you've got the Kickstarter script, which presumably is all a Fedora spin really is. So you just get that, run it, whoosh, and then it builds your ISO, and that's just an install file, but you're not maintaining anything. You don't...
Right, yeah.
You've just got that script.
That's cool.
But yeah, that's Puppy Linux news. In gaming news, SteamOS has been announced. Presumably a new distro. It's a Linux-based open operating system. Sounds like a distro to me.
It must be based on Ubuntu.
Well, I was wondering that, because I'm guessing they're not going to want to go to Mir.
No, that's true. That's
a
very good
Debian.
Point.
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, I'd guess Debian, just because of the range of hardware that it supports. It means that they'll be able to really specialise and make it work for something for them, bespoke.
I I would guess Debian, because that would allow them to keep the Ubuntu package relatively easy. It would be basically the same.
Yeah.
And they can, cause they're going to strip out everything, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Other than just what you need to game and watch telly.
But I thought then they'd use Gentoo, because you can recompile it with all these awesome flags. Distro writers. Yeah.
I think it's good. I mean, I know there's some love and some hate for Valve and everything, but I think this sounds like a very sensible thing to do. I used to be a PC gamer, and one of the reasons I left and started using consoles was because I just don't have the time or the money to continually upgrade and have an inferior kind of gaming performance when setting a baseline specification, even if you have to reboot to it for Windows users. You know, it makes a lot of sense. It turns your PC into a console. They can set a base specification. People can sell hardware with the SteamOS logo on it. You know, I think it's great.
Well, I was thinking about this the other day, and the biggest change I can see, because this is really, it's a console OS that the manufacturers that can then just make their own devices for. And it's going to end the console cycle if it takes off.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, yeah, one console wait 4 or 5 years, next version. And that'll be gone. It'll just be a continuous upgrade. And I don't really know whether or not that's a good thing or not.
I think for PC gamers are a slightly different kind of breed. And I think for them, it probably solves a problem.
Yeah.
You know, rather than switching to consoles. But it's awesome for Linux, because Linux will get native versions of all those games going to Steam. Absolutely. As well as a great Steam client, you know, just in general. I mean, the buzz over those announcements this week on the internet was massive. It was colossal. It was in the BBC.
Mm.
You know, it's a big news story. And once again, Linux is always mentioned, even though it wasn't mentioned in the Valve press release.
Wasn't it?
No, I don't think it was. I think... I didn't search for it, but I'm pretty sure I noticed that was like in the gestation part of a project, it's Linux, it's cool, we're a startup, we're doing awesome stuff, and then at this point it's like, it's SteamOS. You know, let's not mention Linux again, because it's the same thing with Android. I think you know, officially you find it very difficult to find any mention of Linux with Android, because they create a brand.
Well, for a long time it wouldn't technically be right to call Android Linux, because they forked
that's
the kernel.
True. Yeah, that's true.
Obviously now it's not. I was going to say something then, and now I've forgotten. Sorry. It.
Probably best to keep it for the open ballot.
Aha. Which is Steam related.
I say, yeah, one of the Steam things is it did say it would be open source, so presumably it's not just going to be chucked full of binary blobs. Presumably the drivers.
They've always emphasised open, which is good.
Oh, definitely. It sounds like a great thing. Sticking with the gaming openness news. NVIDIA have announced they're going to put more support into the Nouveau, the open drivers for the NVIDIA hardware. They've released some documentation, which may not sound like a big thing, but I'm sure the Nouveau developers are really grateful for it.
Linus said that there wasn't actually that much in the documentation.
Well, they said that this is the first piece they're releasing. And it's going to be a long-going thing. Why they need to do it in a series, I don't know.
Well, there are often sort of issues... I don't know. Sometimes, like, parts of these chips are outsourced to other companies, aren't they? And it's, maybe they don't have control over every bit of IP in them. But it's good that it's happening, because I don't know the ins and outs of it all, but we all remember Linus Torvalds' famous statement about NVIDIA, so maybe that'll change his mind.
Well, after NVIDIA made that statement, after Linus made that statement, NVIDIA posted to one of the kernel development mail list and said, what can we do? And one of the suggestions by Matthew Garrett was... to help the Nouveau project with the 2D drivers, move the 3D drivers to user space, so keep the kernel space stuff open source. And they haven't announced that this is what they're going to do, but it looks like that could be a path that they're going to go down.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, and it's part of the process, you know, working. It's good to have to see them engaging with the community and a bit of back and forth, so it presumably isn't the last announcement they'll make. And
yeah. I mean, it's the right. The compass is heading in the right direction,
exactly,
you know, because it was only a couple of years ago. Linus, in particular, was having a great deal of difficulty dealing with their embedded systems and trying to get some sense out of it.
Yeah.
And as he admits, the NVIDIA part of the company that's responsible for those turned it around and became incredibly open. And it's nice to see that the GPU part might be following suit.
Definitely. Yeah.
With a big company like NVIDIA, they must have squillions of employees. Presumably, there's many of those people were in favour of openness anyway.
Yeah.
And Linux drivers, and it would only take a small shift to bring them to the fore.
It's this big eternal debate, you know, the same with the Qt project and the old version of Qt. You know, it's our private, it's the same with MySQL, you know, starting off as a closed source project. It's the confidence that these people have in their proprietary systems. They can't let it go.
And it's also, it's really easy to be sort of negative, oh, they really closed that. But at the end of the day, they started supporting Linux really early on, even if it was with binary drivers. They can't have made a profit on that.
No, that
must have just been to support the OS.
And it's probably the only reason why Linux is a viable alternative for Valve today.
Definitely, you know.
So they didn't, the end justifies the means.
Yeah. And our final piece of news this fortnight is CyanogenMod have raised $7 million to develop the system and hopefully create some devices, some native CyanogenMod devices.
$7 million, respect.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's officially a cool number.
So it's at the moment you buy a... Sorry, Ben, you were going to say something far cleverer than me.
It's not that clever. I was going to say, apparently that's 25 million short to create a smartphone.
That's quite clever.
Well, you know, you've been playing... A couple of weeks ago, you were playing with all of these OSs on your Nexus for the cover feature in Linux format. And I'd never really thought about CyanogenMod before as an open source alternative to Android, but I really liked the idea, and what you showed me made a lot of sense. And if they can turn that into a viable product, that is brilliant.
I mean, I've shifted it now to my main tablet OS. It's great, and I'm not missing anything. I don't have Google Play installed, although you can do that.
Does it have its own sort of app store package manager or something?
It doesn't come with it, but obviously F-Droid, if you're interested in open source stuff, that works really well. There's loads of stuff on it. The other option, which I don't use, is Amazon App Store's just available for download.
Ah, okay.
So all the Kindle stuff you can just grab. And as I say, you can download the stuff for Google Play, although that's legally grey.
Right, because it's not official Android.
Exactly. I think there's something around the idea that if the device was originally certified Android, it then legal, but...
Well, someone somewhere has paid the Google tax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, like I said, it's a legal grey area. At the moment, Google don't care. They may change their mind if CyanogenMod take off. But actually, the really interesting thing about this bit of news that I read was a guy called Moxie Marlin Spikes developing their text client, and he's a bit of a legend in the crypto world. He's developed all sorts of stuff, but he's a proper security guy. He knows the stuff. He's not in the pocket of the NSA, and this looks like this could be the first real secure messaging app to come natively into mobile.
Great.
Which is great news, because you know the standard options are pretty terrible, really. The iMessage, the WhatsApp, the SMSs, they're all, you know, useless security, frankly.
Excellent. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah,
good work. Thanks, Ben. Excellent news.
So, discovery of the fortnight and discovery of the 3 months for you, Mike.
Yeah, if not even more than that.
You must have discovered something really awesome in the last 3 months, Mike.
Well, I have. There's a place. There's a small sort of village suburb area just south of Munich called Winning. Actually, it's Winning, of course. But and I'll send you the Google Maps link.
Right? Is it twinned with Ulverston?
I don't know where Ulverston is. The other discovery that we haven't mentioned in the news, that nobody really seems to care about, it's like GNOME 3.10 has come
out. Actually, I do really care.
You care about GNOME?
I do. Yeah. I've mentioned this in the podcast, that after speaking to Karen Sandler, and Andrew put up the interview that he did with her at OSCON, it's on Tux Radar. It's a fantastic read. I urge everyone to read it. So after speaking to her, I became... I had an awful lot of respect for the GNOME team and what they're trying to do, and I will try and move to it. So I sincerely mean it.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So I was looking at a blog from one of the GNOME developers, Matthias Klaasen, and he said one of the features in this release is, we have a new combined system status menu. This addresses a number of complaints about our previous system status area, such as the username taking up too much space on the top bar. I don't think I've ever seen anyone complain about that. And I read loads and loads of forums. I read Slashdot, Reddit, all sorts of
people
places.
People complain about everything.
Well, yeah, but, you know, people are using... That's fine if you're talking about handheld devices and very small screen real estate. But most people are using Linux on desktop computers. And there's so much. What you ultimately have is you see fewer things immediately. You have to click to get access to more information. And that's the way the GNOME team wants to go with things, fair enough. But it just, for desktop computers, that doesn't appeal to me.
The top bar is almost empty anyway.
Exactly, exactly. So I find that a bit strange. And then he said in the blog, next, many applications are using header bars instead of traditional title bars. Our previous approach of hiding title bars on maximized windows had the problem that there was no obvious way to close maximized windows. So they just realized that now in GNOME 3.10. We had all those articles and blog posts and stuff from William John McCann saying, "Now we're going in the right direction here." And now all these releases later, it's like, there are major fundamental problems with the design, which is what people were saying early on. I want to support what the GNOME guys are doing. I just think it would have been way better if they'd announced GNOME 3 as GNOME NG or something and carried on with GNOME 2 for a while and said, "We're going to do this experimental desktop, you know, and see, maybe transfer some of the bits and bobs into the mainstream GNOME branch." But by just throwing everything away and just trying this, you know, and some of the mistakes they made with the user interface in the first place, like you had to press Alt to shut down the computer, completely undiscoverable. Yeah, well, unforgivable. Yeah, so
I completely agree with you. And it's weird that the way that free software works in this way, it's like the wind. You know, they haven't got the coercive power of money to make them do things in a certain way, which sometimes makes them go a little bit wild and crazy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's something that we can solve in some way. I don't know how, you know, but I mean, the GNOME team, they do all these usability tests. They actually do get groups of people into a room and say that they're testing. They did that with all the 2X releases. You know, so I'm surprised that they haven't been more kind of humble, I suppose, to some of the criticisms.
I think that's
the usability criticisms.
I think that's been one of the problems. Obviously, they're trying to target GNOME at not just advanced old-style Linux users who want to do everything like it was in the 1980s with TWM and stuff. But nonetheless, I still see so many people really deeply dissatisfied with GNOME 3, just reading forums. And I think they must have lost a lot of people to XFCE now. So, yeah, if their hearts and souls are in it, I wish them well. The fact that they're still having to make pretty major interface changes now because they realised they made mistakes earlier is like, it doesn't sound like they had that much of a vision.
And we went through this with KDE as well. I mean, what's with it with these big projects that nail it in one release and then throw it all out the window?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something in programmers, developers' brains. You know, there is something of that in, I've done this, but now I need to rewrite it a different way to just, you know, do something even cooler.
Well, people don't like maintaining things, do they? Everybody wants to. Yeah. GNOME 2.x have become very stable, very mature. You know, it worked how everybody expected. And who wants to just maintain little, you know, patches here and there? No, let's redesign the whole thing for a whole new user experience. Well, I want to interface with my computer, not experience it. And that's that.
Thanks, Mike.
Now I'll go home.
Shall I do mine? And do you want to do? I haven't got great discoveries. So.
Well, I was going to lead on from Mike. He discovered the village of winning. This isn't a recent discovery. I discovered the village of hell.
Excellent.
In Norway. And to be fair, I'm not entirely sure it's a village or just a bridge. But
there's a bridge over the river Styx.
There's a bridge with just a sign on it saying hell. We can actually put up a photo of it. There's me stood next to the gates of hell.
Awesome.
Excellent. Good work.
But yeah, my other discovery, I've got a Linux one and a non-Linux one. I'm going to start the Linux one because the non-Linux one is awesome. So I'll end with the good one. The Linux one is Sonic Pi. It's a bit hard to describe. It's kind of like an audio programming language they built for the Raspberry Pi. It's designed for schools to sort of teach kids, get them excited about programming, etc. But it also, I haven't actually used it yet, but it just looks like an awesome thing just to play around with. It's one of those things where you can just really get stuck in straight away and just do sounds and make things sound crazy and get things going on.
It's like a synth or...
It's basically... They describe it as a way to build synths easily.
Okay.
Is it visual?
It might have a visual component, but it's code. I'd say it's to teach the components of programming. And it in a way where you can just get stuck in and do something really quickly rather than just, you know, the usual stuff, which is, you know, just a different take on it. And looks like an awesome project.
I spent 2 days at opening the API and getting the sound card settings right.
Not everyone programs in C++.
I've nearly finished my M Audio Mixer.
Yeah, my second discovery is I discovered that shark attacks save more lives than they take. On average, statistically based, for every person that's killed by a shark, that scares so many people from swimming that 10 people don't drown who would, statistically would have drowned. So on average, 9 people are saved.
So what needs to happen for there to be no shark deaths ever?
Well, Steven Spielberg should have been given a sainthood for Jaws then, shouldn't he? Because he must have saved a lot of lives.
Yeah, because drowning is so much more dangerous than sharks. By not being in the water, you are...
I think, to be honest, any form of death is equally as dangerous as the next.
That's true. In numbers killed per hour in the water. That's based on a study in San Diego. The result may not scale worldwide. Huh.
I imagine the shark attack in Whitley Bay would save no lives at all.
Whereas in Australia, they're all just mental anyway.
Yeah, they just punch the sharks. Yeah.
And that's my discoveries.
Awesome.
Shall I go next?
You can do. I don't know. It feels like holding a door open and awkwardly going, after you, no, after you.
I know. Okay, I'll go next. I've got an old PC underneath the television that I used to use for MAME, but I don't use MAME anymore now that I use a TV head end and Xbox Media Player, Media Center. But I've been trying to turn it into a Steam box just this past week. But it's actually not that old. It's got like a 2 gig or 2.2 gig Core 2 Duo CPU in there and a couple of gig of RAM and a reasonable graphics card. So it would be an all right machine for lots of the 2D indie games. But it doesn't boot off USB. So, and I might have discovered this before, but it's the Plop bootloader. It's basically a replacement for Grub, although you can install it inside Grub. So I had Arch running on that machine. I was able to, in Arch, install the Plop bootloader as an added menu option to Grub. It's very simple. And then when you choose Plop bootloader, it turns into like an Amiga demo. It's like got a Starfield at the back, but it'll allow you to choose a USB device and you can boot off a Ubuntu or whatever you happen to install off that. Mm. It's really cool. It's incredibly versatile and it's very easy to install. It's just like a binary file that you stick in the boot folder. And then aside from that, I've then been playing... Sir, You're Being Hunted, which is an awesome game. It was a game funded by on Kickstarter, I think, where they wanted like £40,000 and they got £80,000 or £90,000. And Linux has always been a part of it because it's built on Unity, and it's deceptively addictive. You basically just have to find these parts of a transporter on an open world sandbox kind of game. But in this world, there are these strange kind of robots trying to hunt you down. And the whole thing is like a stealth thing. So you have to move quietly. If you disturb birds, the robots will come after you. And it's quite spooky and haunting. And you have to kind of build up resources and find a way of getting the bits. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds great.
And then another thing is Pixel Junk, great games company, have just announced Pixel Junk Monsters. For Linux, which I've got a key for, but not actually been able to play yet. But that'll be another great thing to try. And I love all this game stuff coming to Linux. So that's kind of my
discovery. Sounds like the best time to be a Linux gamer now. Yeah.
They're my discoveries.
Can I open a parenthesis here?
Yeah.
Sir, You Are Being Hunted. I think we're going to be mentioning that in next issue's cover feature.
Ah, yes, you're right.
About crowdfunding.
Because so many free software companies and open source people have had such great success crowdfunding their own projects.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, there's loads of stuff.
The Ouya, that Ubuntu thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, 12 million people, $12 million have committed money.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot of money out there and we can, you know, help funnel it into awesome free software.
Yeah. And if the results are things like Sir, You've Been Hunted, then it's a big win.
Yeah. And, of course, Elite Dangerous, which isn't going to be on Linux yet, but...
Yeah, and it's closed source, but hey, we love it anyway.
But it's David Braben.
Yeah, I have a future of Linux on gaming on
you
Linux.
You didn't close that parenthesis.
Oh, no.
No, yeah. My OCD's kicking in.
Do you have parentheses in ASM?
Thanks, Mike. You're the best. The future of gaming on Linux is it's not Steam, it's not Valve, it's not even So You're Being Hunted. It's Little Master.
Little Master.
Little Master.
No, I've not seen it.
Have you played Quop?
Oh, is that where you're controlling the runner?
Yes.
And you've got keys for his legs and arms, and he always falls over.
He falls over after like half a meter.
Yeah.
It's really addictively hard. The same person who's done that has done a cricket game called Little Master, named in honour of the Little Master himself, Mr. Tendulkar, and it's just it's so compelling.
Well, you're a batsman then,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Is it similarly complicated? You're controlling all these limbs, and
it's not. But it's the other way around. It's very simple. You move your mouse where you want the cricket bat to be.
Okay.
But because that abstracts the footwork and all the other angles and things at play in a cricket stroke, it makes it really hard.
Okay.
And it's great. And if anyone can beat my high score of 800 and something, then they deserve a prize. I will post some sort of link in the podcast notes, which will be available at some point on the internet.
Today.
Another discovery is the mother of all demos. Now, this isn't actually a discovery. This is a rediscovery because I'm currently typing up an interview that I conducted at OSCON with John Graham Cumming. He's a chap who was involved in the campaign to get an apology for Alan Turing, which is pretty epic. And he did this demo, this talk about at OSCON about how in 1983 was the pinnacle of technological development. I think, didn't you mention it?
But as soon as we got back.
In your latest welcome page.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned it in the podcast because somebody gave a link to the...
Oh, to the mother of all demos.
Yeah, the mother of all demos in the comments.
My short-term memory is getting really bad.
It wasn't a big deal, but I think I mentioned it as part of talking about how inspirational his keynote was.
But
all those things.
It's from 1968, and there are people, you know, using a mouse.
And he's like video conferencing and has a sort of markup language.
And touching the screen,
touch screen. Yeah. It's absolutely just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And it's really quite slow in places because it's a technical demo. It's not, you know, it's not a Steve Jobs sneakers and jeans and black polo neck. It's not insanely great.
Yeah.
It's just some computer scientists going, look at this. This might be interesting. This might be useful one day.
And when you see all that and put it in the context of the late 1960s and you think, why do I still have these tearing effects when I drag my windows around now in 2013? But get it together, people.
Wasn't there that thing where when Microsoft released Windows 3.1, Steve Jobs went to Bill Gates and went, you ripped us off. And Bill Gates went, no, we both ripped off the same person. That's probably not true.
It would be, that would be awesome if they had the self-awareness.
Yeah.
Those are my discoveries.
Excellent. A pretty broad range of just gaming discoveries then.
And place names.
And stuff that we've already discovered before.
Winning.
And sharks.
Is that... we haven't got our notes, but is that the halfway reminder?
It is the halfway reminder, yes.
He's getting better at this.
So as sharks and discoveries echo around the halls of this grand grade 2 listed building with its airy high Georgian ceilings, we come hurtling to the halfway point. Still to come, there's a Speak Your Brain.
There is a Speak Your Brain.
Yeah. The reports of our latest challenge, which was set by Effie, who can't be with us today.
Because we're doing this too early.
And the open ballot. I did remind Effie last night, but it is just too early.
It's just impossible.
you can't be doing it. It's amazing that Ben's here, actually. So.
It is. We start only just.
Yeah. For reference, we started this podcast at about 20 to 10, I think, or quarter to 10 this morning. Okay, so I've got Speak Your Brains. This one is from someone called Tanner. He says, hello, guys. The last podcast got me thinking a lot about Linux for beginners, and it reminded me that one of the biggest stumbling blocks I've experienced in using Linux, I mainly stick to dev-based distros, was the fact that there was such great diversity in hardware that it begins to become impossible to configure it all correctly. As a beginner, it always got the best of me, and I spent many a night on forums well into the morning with that 50cm beard the other fellow was talking about. I recently got a Samsung Series 7 with the dual GPU setup, and it really gave me a run for my money. I ran across a really nifty tool for Debian distributions called SMXI, smxi.org/smxi.zip, that configures your hardware basically for you. It brings step by step through the deepest crevices of your device and gives you options as to how to configure all the hardware. You have to run it without X and root, and as root, I guess he means. So it may prove a little difficult for a first-time user, but like we've all learned, being horribly confused is most of the fun. Thank you guys so much for such an awesome show. Live long and prosper.
That's a pretty good discovery by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tanner.
His brain is spoken.
50 centimetres is also a good length for a beard.
Yes. That reaches international standards of geekiness.
It was recently the International Beard and Moustache Championship. If you appreciate beards, check out the photos online for that.
Where was that?
I would imagine Germany.
Because I'm sure Nick Veitch went to it once.
Nick Veitch did go to it.
Yeah, some pretty epic beards and giant moustaches there.
Yeah, Nick Veitch was the old editor of Linux Format magazine. He grew an awesome beard. Mm. But I don't think he's got it now.
No, he does have a beard, but it's very short. It's almost George Michael designer stubble.
Yeah, he's become a hipster, really, hasn't he?
Since he started
hipster.
Since he started working for Canonical. He's too cool. But, what now? What's happening now?
Right, well, it's the challenge report, but I only remembered what it was this morning.
Oh. Oh. Somebody at the door.
It must be Effie.
It might be Effie. That'd be amazing.
Stay tuned, listeners. You're hearing this live.
Or it's the people come to look at Andrew's flat.
It is Effie.
Hey!
It's pretty cool. Effie's here.
What have we been
calling?
Hello! Yeah, so we were saying, Effie's here. We were just about to do the report on the challenge section, which I think, remember we did the Wheel of Destiny two weeks ago?
Yes, and hello everyone.
And you chose it.
Yeah. Yeah,
you remember what it was?
Yeah, you're supposed to do something arty using some open source desktop publishing applications, whether it's, I don't know, a poster or something like that. And
I guess you decided to go first, really, to show us what you mean.
I haven't done it. It was your challenge.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Who says the challenge doesn't do it?
Hey, I have a challenge every issue, my friend. So. Anyway.
Well, I haven't done it either.
We'll just leave it there.
I'm sorry, things have been really busy. We had a deadline on Wednesday that didn't go till Thursday. I was very busy yesterday.
Yeah, I was a bit hungover yesterday. Sorry about that.
So, fail. Love the challenge idea. We're useless at it.
Hang on. Not quite.
Whoa. Andrew's going to embarrass us now.
Obviously, you can't see it on the podcast because you can only hear sound. But here's what I've done.
Whoa.
Ah, nice.
Did you use Scribus?
I did use Scribus.
Yeah.
It's. I find it really hard to use. It's easy, but it's... I think the problem is because it's so similar to InDesign, I'm expecting things to be in exactly the same place. If it had a completely different interface, completely different layout, it would be a lot easier to use, but less sensible to use, if you see what I mean. But just because I know what I'm doing with InDesign.
What does the butterfly represent?
The butterfly represents happiness. But what I thought I'd go for was I thought I'd hark back to the ye olde days of Madchester, you know, inspired by Mad Lab, which is a real thing in Manchester where people do hacky stuff. So it's more or less a sort of Tux imagined as Sean Ryder from the Happy Mondays, with the slogan "Step on to Odd Camp."
Yeah.
like it.
Which you'll be able to see as soon as we upload it in the podcast notes.
And you weren't the only one. It was, in fact, I think it was just you, Graham, that didn't pull your finger out. You said use some open source software to create it. I went down a slightly different route. I've gone to use some open source JavaScript libraries and done it in HTML.
What? There you go.
So
that's great.
Wow, Web 2.0.
Yeah.
It's just me that fails.
No, so, I did one in assembly language.
Case. Yeah.
Where can we go to look at yours, Ben?
It'll be in the podcast notes.
Sweet.
There you go. Almost a success.
Yeah. I don't think it's worth setting one for next time.
Well, because we're so abjectly bad.
Because we're busy.
No, that's no excuse.
Yeah, we're busy all the time. And we're lazy.
Should we invite readers to give us a challenge? Listeners, indeed?
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Listeners, set us a challenge. Preferably one that we could complete with a low bar for success. Yes, that's all.
Did you have a discovery? I mean, if you want to talk about it. Because we just did the discovery section.
Well, I discovered that I can configure MAME on my Linux box. Bit difficult for novices, but it's really good. And in fact, as soon as you know basic instructions of how to configure the application and the front end, it's actually quite easy. It's not that difficult.
MAME just has so many options.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like it is crazy.
It's like 1,000.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I think you manage to get it up and running to a certain level to use, I don't know, say for instance, PlayStation gamepad and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then that's it. That's all you need. If you haven't got a arcade cabinet like you do with the proper controllers. But yeah, it's brilliant. That was my discovery. Really, I've been the whole week just trying to configure that for the kids at home. Yeah,
it's really for good. You, really, isn't it?
Well,
for
yeah,
you,
I mean,
you to buy asteroids.
Defender.
Defender. Yeah.
That's
okay.
Problem.
Okay, so let's have a challenge then. I challenge you to the highest score in Defender.
Oh, this is.
Well,
cool.
We have to find out which is my highest score, or to beat your score.
Well, I don't actually play Defender.
I
find it the control mechanism is really
mental,
weird.
It's mental. Yes.
But so I'm not very good at it. So I'm going to practice.
But
that
what
now.
About something easier like Phoenix?
Okay, yeah, Phoenix. If you want. Yeah,
right,
okay.
Okay, I'll do it, and then in the next podcast, I'll give you my score.
Okay.
My top score, and then see what you do.
Yeah, okay.
There you go.
Brilliant.
That sounds like a good challenge, because I'm going to get the beer out tonight, and I'm going to load up Phoenix and we'll play it until the daylight.
But we have to take a photograph or a screenshot or something like that of it.
Yeah, okay.
So to prove it, excellent.
Okay.
There you go. Simple.
I like these challenges. Let's do Mario 64 coin challenges soon.
Sounds like less of a challenge, more of a duel.
Yeah.
Also, I discovered I installed ZSNES.
ZSNES.
And I
love
lost,
that.
I lost all sound on the actual emulator. It plays everything.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. It had sound at the beginning and then just lost it. And I don't understand why.
I've been having a similar problem like this. Are you running Ubuntu? Is Ubuntu
Mint?
Mint, yeah. I've had this problem as well. That the sound plays for about 3 minutes, and then goes. But if I kill and restart Pulse Audio, it works, and that's very annoying. I don't want to go on a Pulse Audio rant, but the fact that Pulse Audio is still causing problems today. But yeah, Pulse Audio.
You have to kill Pulse Audio.
I think you can configure ZSNES to avoid using Pulse Audio and just hit
sound
device directly or something. Yeah, I'll let you know.
All right, thank you very much.
That's it, isn't it? I guess it's time for the open ballot.
Open ballot ahead of Steam or just a fizzle? And I've just distracted myself because there's a really nice pub in Durham called the Head of Steam. And what makes it awesome? Two things make it awesome. It's hidden in this little court. Three things must ye know about the wise woman.
That it be.
They do all the cool Belgian stuff.
Right.
They do lots of like local stuff from like 2 or 3 miles away, which is always good when you're imbibing. and it's just around the corner from a ginormous Wetherspoons. So all the people that are in the Wetherspoons, I'm judging you.
Brought to you by Wetherspoons.
That's one thing I never understood in England. What's the beef with Wetherspoon pubs? Why are they so wrong?
They're not all that bad.
Yeah. They just tend to all be the same, don't they?
It's a base level.
Yeah.
It's a base level.
Yeah.
They don't have much character to them.
Right, I see. Okay.
Which can be desirable. If you're in a town with an unsavoury character, then you want to be in the Wetherspoons.
They're places where you can get a pint at like 9 o'clock in the morning, so if things get bad 99 pence, yeah.
And they were serving real ale back when not that many places served real ale.
True.
Yeah,
they do have actually quite a lot of beers in there, yeah, so.
Although I've never had a good pint of ale in a Wetherspoons.
I think it used to really depend on the individual Wetherspoons, yeah, when the bar manager cared
it about does ale. And having just mocked Wetherspoons there, I must say that the one in Bishop Auckland is very, very good. So, other pubs are available. Open ballots. The Head of Steam. No, not the Head of Steam. Steam OS. Valve has announced Steam OS, Linux distro built for gaming in the living room. Gabe Newell thinks that it's a good thing, obviously. Is it the best thing since sliced bread? Ben says, actually, I hate sliced bread with a passion. Unsliced loaves are so much tastier, and seriously, how hard is cutting a fresh slice? Let us know what you think about open source games and Steam and stuff like that. So, bread. Why the digression?
Well, it's the same, best thing since sliced bread, but is sliced bread really that good? Because you get these like little plastic wrapped loaves with the slices up, but they've just got no flavour compared to like a proper loaf where you cut off your own slice. And it's not like it's a hard thing. That's it. Well, 2 seconds.
Time is money.
No, hang on. It is difficult to cut a properly balanced slice of bread from a loaf.
But an unbalanced slice from a proper loaf is still like 10 times better than a balanced slice from a proper slice.
No, if you want to put it on the toaster.
Well, have it untoasted. It's got flavour. The only reason you need to toast sliced bread is because it's got no flavour to it. And by toasting, it's the only way you can make it edible.
Well, Polyamorous Penguin says, having had a bread maker for over a year now, I've discovered that cutting very fresh slices, i.e. hot out of the oven, is almost impossible. The bread is very soft and squidgy and like wibbly-wobbly jelly to even the sharpest knife. Consequently, the slices are uneven, thick and usually in bits. In a word, dough. However, leaving the loaf to cool for a good few hours does the trick. The bread dries out and becomes nice and crisp to cut, and you can manage very thin slices easily. Much butter, if you ask me. I'm not sure whether that's a typo for much better.
The issue with bread makers is because I believe it's because of the way they knead the bread, because they have the little spinny thing. That it's not as good as proper kneading, and it's as you knead the bread that the bread, is it the glutens, the long...
It is gluten.
Yeah, that forms, and that's what causes the springiness, and that's what helps it hold together. And because they can't do that properly, you get it's not as springy, so it doesn't cut as well. So you can cut freshly baked bread if you do it by hand.
And also, the bread maker leaves lumps of dough on the actual final bread loaf.
Well, it's best to do the kneading manually, I think, before you put it into the bread maker to get rid of that.
Well, then what is the point of having
No, because it handles the proofing and then baking. So you don't have to worry about it after the kneading stage.
And it is quite nice when you can do stuff like time it. So even if it's not perfectly kneaded, you can have it baked fresh when you wake up.
Yeah. Sultan of Swing says, if Ben states that he hates sliced bread, but then later in the same sentence remarks that unsliced loaves are better because he can freshly cut a slice, does not the fresh slice merely represent sliced bread?
You've caught me in your word trap.
Furthermore, isn't sliced bread fresh when it is sliced? Perhaps he's referring to pre-sliced bread as opposed to self-sliced. For my money, I prefer chunks of bread, either cut from a bigger uncut loaf, or depending on how macho I'm feeling, torn from the loaf. Yeah! Now that's a meal. Like a real man.
Yeah,
a real
man. Bread does taste better when it's ripped apart. Actually, personally, my favourite is flatbreads that you don't need to cut, but I will concede that I did mean pre-sliced bread rather than the slicing itself.
It's not so much the slicingness, it's the trans fats. It's the fat, it's the way that it doesn't go stale, it just goes mouldy.
Yeah, that worries
me. That's just weird.
Like, yeah.
bread in this country is odd. Not the inventor of diced bread, says, I totally agree, Ben. Sliced bread... What person in their right mind couldn't slice a simple piece of bread? But imagine this. You wake up from yet another feverish dream about desperately trying to dice your bread for your upcoming party. The dicers were nowhere near the same sizes, and the crust kept coming in your way. Wow, what a nightmare. And Fred Dread the Bread. No, that's not about bread. That's about SteamOS. I'm not going to read that out.
Oh, well, and that's the open ballot then, yeah?
Right, so that bread digression out of the way. Yates, he says, I don't see why it should be a success unless they start dropping support for major Steam clients features on different distros, or they create some incredible GUI front end. I think that's sort of beside the point, really. I mean, other distros can have Steam support, and SteamOS can also win hugely. It depends what sort of audience you're going for.
I mean, the big selling point about Steam OS is that it'll boot straight into what they're calling big picture mode, which means that you can control it easily with like a USB joypad.
When you're sitting on the sofa.
Exactly. I mean, there's no reason you couldn't boot into, you know, Arch or whatever and then start it, but you know you'd be fiddling around. And
And plus the integration and the knowledge that everything will work. I mean, if you've got a Steam client on... If you've only ever played Steam games on Windows, then and you get a Steam OS or a Steam box, you know that it will work. That you don't need to faff about with
and the
compiling your own kernel.
There's family sharing as well now, so you can share your games list with other people in the family, so that somebody else can play a game from your Steam library upstairs, which you can't do if you've got one PlayStation.
Yeah. That's a brilliant, brilliant feature.
I would imagine they're also going to be bundling just all the graphics drivers or as many as they can possibly fit on. So it just works.
Okay, well, I missed something because I haven't got an account with Steam. So now you have a proper distribution.
It's like an app store for games. It's been around for a long time. It's been a big, big success. And Valve is a bit of a renegade company. It doesn't have any management structure, and people supposedly don't have any roles. They can do whatever they want. So the whole thing is run as this kind of big brainstorming new world company. And it's been a big success. They've got a lot of money to spend on things, and I suppose for this is how they want to head off the next generation of consoles.
So, but now you have the alternative of starting your Linux box straight into the main operating system.
They've announced SteamOS this week, which is based on Linux, which is just going to boot into their games front end to be able to just play games immediately. And it also means that all the games that are being ported to SteamOS will work on Linux as well, on a normal Linux system.
That's just awesome.
It's massive, yeah, it's brilliant.
Well, we don't know many technical details about it yet,
No, we don't.
We don't even know what the sort of display server it's going to use, do we? Or,
well, no, that's what Ben said earlier on. Yeah. You know, that's probably why it won't be Ubuntu, as he said.
Yeah, but you know, whether they're going to use X or Wayland or create something completely from scratch, like I think Android did. Mm.
JD Schrock says, support, support, support. Imagine that in the Steve Ballmer voice. I think this will be a huge win for gaming on Linux, not just because we'll be getting even more games through Steam, but with everything that Valve has been doing with video card manufacturers to update drivers, it should help with all games. I look forward to finally being able to cut the MS cord and tell my PC gaming, Linux-hating co-workers to suck it. Just makes me think of sucking an umbilical cord.
That's not very nice.
I don't think that's what he intended. M. Hyperbolic says, I think one thing that people overlook in the debate about Steam on Linux is whether or not Steam has the market power, to make the big game developers turn out Linux products instead of Windows products. Sure, all the indie developers love Steam and happily support Linux, and some big titles do hit Steam, but it's still very, very few. No matter what Steam does, if the big titles don't hit Steam, no matter how good or bad SteamOS and the Steam box is, it won't be a replacement for avid gamers. Now, Valve... do they, this is a rhetorical question, do they have any big titles?
Yes. Half-Life. Half-Life 3 will be one of the biggest games of the decade.
They've done the announcement in three sections. The first was SteamOS, the second was devices, and the third one everyone expects is going Half-Life to be some 3. AAA games.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
Half-Life, possibly more. And that's, is that just as we're recording this?
I think I've lost track of the times, but yeah.
I think that announcement is about now.
So quick, you will get on the internet.
They would be silly not to. I mean,
the lessons of history show that if you launch a big console without decent games to support it, it doesn't do very well. And I remember Altered Beast and Michael Jackson's Moonwalker with a sort of fond retro nostalgia, but I remember Super Mario Brothers 3 with something a lot more.
Yeah.
Brr.
Yeah. You still want to play it.
I do.
Yeah.
I still want to play Altered Beast, actually, from time
Power up!
From time to time. Rise from your grave. Noob says, starts his post by saying, steamy windows, which is great.
but the comment itself.
That's it. Spangler just says yes.
Aha. Uh-huh. It's good to know.
To the question, head of steam or just a fizzle? Like, so, I'm not sure what
well,
he
the
meant,
actual
what
question it was, will steam be a success?
Oh, right. Yes. Like that, yes, it will. It also ends by saying, bees are our friends, pyjamas are confining, and my favourite dinosaur is the noble triceratops.
What makes it noble?
It just is.
Well,
really.
Not really.
Those three horns are like a crown.
Ah, yeah. There.
Right, this is Torwack has fallen into an intellectual trap. Who cares? I just don't get the point. Who cares if Linux is used for gaming? I, and I guess many other Linux users, don't play games on our machines, period. Instead of getting all the dev work and attention into proprietary gaming, how about pushing into commercial software? Besides OS alternatives, we still wait for things like Photoshop, AutoCAD and co, many academic softwares, etc. If that is too boring, how about better device support? Or make it simple and just give us a PDF reader with a full set of working annotation capabilities. After that, we can talk about gaming. No hate, I just believe there are more urgent tasks to solve rather than gaming. Well, of course there are more urgent tasks. There are always more urgent tasks.
The thing, if you're a Linux user, you can't be that interested in AAA titles because you can't play them on Linux. So, you know, that's kind of... that's the argument. However, this is a completely new pool of Linux users and people who are going to experience Linux for the first time. It's just a massive growth area.
But how much will they transfer into being Linux users as we, you know, as we describe them? It's like Android.
Very similar to Android.
How many people are using Linux now because they use Android? But
it's still better than them using Windows.
Yeah, definitely.
And the other thing is, it's not taking developers away from anything. This has been created by Valve. Valve are not going to turn around and port AutoCAD to Linux.
That would be quite cool.
It's not what they do.
Well, you said the developers there can work on what they want, so maybe there is an internal project.
This isn't... this. It will encourage other people to develop for Linux. It will show that there's a user base. It will show that... and if anything, it'll accelerate the pace of development in other areas. It's not taking away from it.
I think it's, less dominance of Microsoft Windows, the better in any case. Whether they'd use NetBSD or whatever, it's getting people away from Windows dominance.
Polyamorous Penguin says, why bother to play games on Linux when hunting kernel bugs and tweaking vast swathes of code for speed bottlenecks is so much more fun? And Stuart says, on the bread front, I am with Ben on the unsliced loaf.
Yeah.
So it's settled then.
That's pretty much it.
The age-old debate.
I think, I'm very surprised by this. There seems to be a split between people who think that Steam OS is going to be fantastic and those who just don't care or think that it's irrelevant. Whereas I just see it as an enormous win. Mm. Even though I don't play games other than Little Master and Frontier.
Yeah,
Everybody plays Frontier.
Anything that can bring, that gives people a reason to use Linux and port Linux over to new hardware and find new users is just great.
Mm.
Yeah. I think the one thing that hasn't been brought up, and I think it'll be key to getting the hardcore gamers, is the performance. At the moment, Left 4 Dead 2 runs faster on Linux than it does on Windows.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But obviously, it's not a latest title. If that performance increase translates to new stuff, it will be a massive, massive win. Because hardcore gamers will slaughter their parents for an extra few frames a second.
Yeah.
So if you get a performance increase just by installing SteamOS, that will get a huge user base.
And that's the end of the open ballot.
And that brings us to the end of Episode 17, Series 5. And so that is it. It really is not a joke. Five, nearly 6 years of this podcast.
Mm.
It's been great to be a part of it.
Wow.
And hopefully we'll see you all again soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.